From St. Mary's University of Minnesota, you're listening to St. Mary's Currents. I'm your host, Ben Rogers. Today on the podcast, we discuss an issue that is familiar to anyone who follows the news of the day: political polarization.
I pledge to be a president who seeks not to divide, but unify.
A series of new NBC polls paint a bleak picture for the direction of our country. 72% of respondents believe America is headed in the wrong direction.
In a poll before the last election, 15% of Republicans and 20% of Democrats agreed that the country would be better off if large numbers of the opposing party just died.
In January 2020, faculty at Brown and Stanford Universities presented research that found in the U.S., polarization has increased more dramatically over the last 40 years than any other prominent democracy. Today, I'm joined by St. Mary's political science professor David Lynch, who speaks to some of the historical background surrounding political polarization, the factors that have led to the divides we see today, and how we as a country might be able to pull ourselves out of the divide.
For there is always light, if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it.
David, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Today's topic is extremely timely and important for our listeners. But first, would you introduce yourself and tell our listeners what you do here at St. Mary's and what your academic interests are?
Sure. So my name's Dave Lynch. I teach mostly political science. I'm in the psychology and social sciences department here at the university. I teach intro American government, international relations, and a variety of other social science courses, a geography and a research methods course.
All right. So today we're talking about political polarization, which is an extremely timely topic as we just recognized the one-year anniversary of the Capitol insurrection, and a prolonged pandemic continues to divide the nation. I don't want to take time to define political polarization, as any listener who follows current events likely understands what it is. Instead, I'd like to dive into the conversation just head first. I remember a conversation I had with my dad during the Obama administration. This would have been during the height of the Tea Party movement on the right and kind of when Occupy Wall Street was at its strongest on the left. And, you know, I asked him, was this the most divided he'd ever seen the country in regards to politics? His response, of course, was yes. That conversation happened quite a few years ago, and quite a bit has happened since, a contentious 2016 and 2020 election, as well as a global pandemic, like I mentioned. So I want to ask you the same question as someone who has spent their career studying politics. Is this the most politically divided we've seen the country in recent history?
Absolutely. In recent history, yes. You know, you go back further, of course. 1850s and 1860s, you can't get any more divided than the Civil War. But this is not our norm, and it gets exceptionally hard to govern when there's this much discord, most definitely.
So to get to where we're at now, do you feel it was a slow build, or was there maybe a rapid event or two that brought about this kind of political polarization?
Sure. I would not point to just exactly one thing. Some people point to... Well, some historians have pointed to actually Ronald Reagan naming the government as the problem, and also doing a little bit of race baiting in some of his campaigns, but which is a bit odd to pin it on him, given that his overall demeanor is as this grandfatherly, very kind person. Even people who didn't agree with his policies liked him as a person, but he was certainly outwardly more conservative and began to push the Republican Party in that direction. And the divide between moderates and conservatives in the Republican Party didn't start with him, but he certainly went far to doing so. In the 90s, we saw an uptick in this. The Newt Gingrich was sort of a new style politician. He referred to the Democrats as not just the other side of the aisle, but talked in more enemy terms and take no prisoners. He was rather aggressive, to say the least. I was a bit surprised when he had the government shut down in the mid-90s and the public ended up blaming Newt Gingrich and Republicans. I didn't think it was going to land that way, but they did. But he used a very much of a take no prisoners sort of language. I remember Doonesbury used to draw the character of Newt Gingrich as just a simple bomb with a lit fuse. They didn't actually draw in the person. And he changed politics a lot and made Congress, I would argue, meaner to each other.
Gingrich was Speaker of the House at this point.
So his rise was as when Republicans were in the wilderness, and he began to challenge the Republican leadership as being too timid and too willing to engage in compromise with Democrats. And so he really took on his own party at the same time he was taking on Democrats. And he was rather brash about it. Again, take no prisoners sort of language. And eventually he became Speaker of the House at a time when Republicans hadn't been in charge of the House in 40 years. And so it was seen as a really a big change. And politics, I would argue, got much sharper than in terms of it was, I would argue, very accusing of his opponents, including those in the Republican Party, I should add. This is where you start having Republicans go back against seniority for how you get committee seats in Congress and begin to be determined based on, in 1995, when Gingrich first took over as Speaker, basically fealty to him and being sufficiently conservative is what got you a seat. So seniority wouldn't do it anymore. So again, this is just another nail in the coffin of bipartisanship. But again, you can't pin it all on him. Most certainly all sorts of things are doing this. The rise of 24-hour news cycle and we'll call it infotainment, sort of news that is much more partisan in nature than it was before. It used to be once upon a time, most of the country watched one of a handful of network news television stations, and that was it. There were no more choices. So later on, we have cable, there are choices. And again, people aren't watching the same thing, so people start having these different realities. There's a long string of this, but it continued on. Certainly the Iraq War also was very divisive.
It
very much was. It's almost laughable to think back as that is divisive now because it looks like a moment of unity compared to what followed.
What about like 2008? Has that played a role? Again, just kind of a big crash, a big crisis in response to that and kind of thinking sure. Resemblance with the pandemic?
All of the above, sure. The 2008 with the Great Recession, anytime the economy is not doing well, there's an argument that this drives discontent. And so that would certainly be the case here. Also, some of the solutions for what needed to happen to get us out of the Great Recession included things like bailing out financial institutions, which angered people both on the right and the left. Really, nearly no one liked the idea of bailing these people out for the sake of moral clarity. It was more about survival. If we don't take care of them, then the whole economic system goes down and we're in trouble, is the thinking of economists. Liberal and conservative economists openly signed a letter saying, yeah, you got to do this. You need to have a big injection of spending. You need to not worry about deficits right now to get us out of this. In order to sort of jar the political system, have a big response, which most economists would argue wasn't actually a huge response to get us out of that. It's pretty inadequate. In any case, the perception was that here government is working for Wall Street, essentially, and not the average person. And it's interesting that sounds like more of a liberal critique or a critique from the left, but you hear that on the right as well. And the pressure on, we'll say, the middle class in this time period, the working class, you don't quite see a splintering yet, but you begin to, and that gets increased later. I should also add, of course, in 2008, Barack Obama wins. He's African American, right? So there is, in fact, a backlash against that. I was surprised at the time seeing the exit polling, the number of people who said they voted the way they voted based on race. And there are quite a few people who did, both for Obama and against. And we do see a rise of some extremism following that increase in activity, extremist activity, white supremacist activity after that. So again, this polarization increases. It's kind of funny. I think back to, I think it was the election against McCain, where one of his followers, I think, booed, if I remember correctly, when Obama's name came up.
I got to ask you a question. I do not believe in, I can't trust Obama. He's an Arab.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. He's a decent family man, citizen that I just happen to have disagreements with on fundamental issues, and that's what this campaign is all about. He's not. Thank you. Thank you.
Fast forward, that's gone.
We'll be right back in a minute.
Separate yourself from the rest and take your career to the next level with an online degree from St. Mary's University of Minnesota. Nationally ranked and fully accredited, our programs are student-centered with faculty that infuse practical career experience into their teaching and engage in their disciplines. Set your own schedule with our flexible online platform and access your coursework anywhere with our selection of affordable online degree programs. Promising career opportunities will follow. Explore what's next at St. Mary's University of Minnesota.
So, you know, if you had to identify maybe the biggest factor leading to polarization, what would it be? Again, maybe it's not a single bullet, but maybe in your mind, if there's just one.
I guess I'll kind of go with two. I'm an academic. One is very hard, right?
Right.
But besides, you know, I already mentioned the different media bubbles people are living in. So they are seeing different realities and hearing different realities based on their media consumption. That would certainly be one of it. But another part of it is the death of competitive districts in Congress. So it used to be there were quite a few swing districts. These are districts that could go either way, Democratic or Republican, depending on the election. And what that means is if you want to get reelected, no matter what party you're from in that district, you've got to convince people in the middle. And over time, we have fewer and fewer of those districts. And a little bit of this is natural based on self-sorting where people are going, but a lot of it is gerrymandering, which is this drawing of boundaries in order to help one side or another. It's mostly controlled by parties. And so they draw district lines that help themselves and harm the other. And they try to create decently safe districts, but not too safe because then you're wasting votes. So you're essentially drawing districts in such a way that you can maximize your wins in Congress in a decently safe way. And so what you get then is you get people from both parties more worried about losing the next election in the primary to a opponent from their own party. So if you're a Republican, you have to, if you're in Congress, you have to worry about being primaried, is the terminology, by someone further often to the right. If you are a Democrat, you have to be worried about being primaried by someone further to the left. What you don't need to worry about is the general election, where you have to, there you need to appeal to all voters and ideally voters more in the middle. If it's a safe district, though, safely liberal or safely conservative, you don't need to do that. And that's happening more and more.
That's really interesting because, yeah, you know, the media one was kind of the big one that came to mind for me. I did not necessarily think about the makeup of today's congressional districts and how that would play a role. I did want to talk about media consumption and trust in the media and how it plays into that. In October, Gallup reported only 36% of Americans trust the media to report the news accurately. And the only time it's been lower was in 2016 during the Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump election when it dropped down to 34%. I mean, definitely you're seeing this as one of the biggest ones. And as well, I mean, has the rise of things like social media, I mean, do you think that plays a role in all of this?
Sure, absolutely. I would argue the attack on the quote-unquote mainstream media is not helpful. And certainly people are picking their media outlets. You know, often it's uncomfortable to hear things you don't agree with, and we often turn away from that. And now if you can choose, then people are self-selecting. But also, you know, social media, you have algorithms in which they reward you for what you're looking at. So in other words, you get more of the same. So too, users on Facebook or whatever the platform is are going to be seeing different realities. And it turns out we're not particularly good at discerning real news from non-real news. You saw in, I think it was 2016, there were more false stories tweeted out or shared on Facebook than there were real ones. So those are the ones that got the eyeballs. And when I'm talking about fake news here, I don't mean genuine media outlets creating a story that isn't true. I mean sometimes, you know, bots creating stories, or, you know, just literally things that are not true, people doing it for money.
Absolutely. So I want to just take a little bit to talk about the pandemic and the role it's played in polarization. You know, at the beginning of the pandemic, personally, you know, I thought this was going to be an opportunity to set aside political differences and maybe come together for the collective good. That deteriorated pretty fast. You know, never in my life did I think issues of public health and things like vaccines would come down to political beliefs. What do you think kind of went on here, and what led to this?
Well, I would argue what led to this is Donald Trump led to this. Not that it would have been divisive no matter who was president. I would most certainly agree, but Donald Trump certainly has a knack for, you know, finding that scab and picking at it. All sorts of institutions in the United States that were not politicized become politicized in his wake. The Justice Department, the FBI. The FBI had been politicized once upon a time and spent decades getting out of that. and then he'd be pulling them back in. You know, the census gets politicized. The CDC gets politicized. It's a very long list. Imagine what the world would have been like, what the United States response would have been like if that were not the case. I did find it odd at the time, too, because Donald Trump could brag about the success of the vaccine. And that's truly an achievement of his decision-making, that he was all in with a lot of money to pay for vaccines up front, more than one effort, in case one didn't work out. Brilliant. That's great. And yet he's pretty quiet about getting vaccinated. Is again calling all sorts of things relating to the pandemic, you know, hoax-like. So he's politicizing the whole thing, even though he had a chance to quite legitimately claim an enormous badge of success, and largely didn't tout that as much as he's focused on the more divisive things.
All right. So you spoke a little bit about this earlier when you brought up Newt Gingrich confronting Republicans, and then kind of the topic of congressional districts and concerns of primarying candidates. But I kind of want to return to this and talk about it a little more in depth. I think it's pretty easy for a lot of people to see polarization as a Republican versus Democrat issue. But there's still quite a bit of a political spectrum in both parties. On the right, you have more right-wing populists, or you have folks who maybe hold more libertarian views, religious conservatives, or more moderate, you know, maybe neoconservatives. And then when you look at the Democrats, it ranges from third-way centrists to progressives to maybe even more, European-style social Democrats. Does this further polarization, and what are the impacts of having a variety of political ideologies like this?
Yeah, in our political system, right, we have a two-party system, like it or not. We have small, minor parties, but our voting system leads to two major parties. So if you are a third party and you do pretty well, let's say you get 10% every single congressional district in the country, you get zero seats out of that in our system. Or if you get 10% of the vote in every single state, statewide, you get nothing. You get no electoral college votes. So we are a system that tends to have these big catch-all parties that have always had divides in them between a more centrist Democrats and more leftist Democrats, more for the people, as you mentioned, to the right in the Republican Party, more moderates. And from, the record from the 60s, into the 80s, a lot of the substantial bills had bipartisan backing. So the civil rights legislation, this was Democrats with moderate Republican support going against, segregationist Democrats from the South. So it was by no means a partisan battle. It was really splitting the Democratic coalition up and using Republican support in order to get these things done. Or the Voting Rights Act, which has largely been gutted, that used to sail through Congress. Both parties were very supportive of it. It's largely been gutted by the Supreme Court. But voting is now also been politicized. So this is very worrying for democracy, just that so many things are politicized. That does make it very, very difficult. And we begin to see one another as opponents, as opposed to multifaceted people. And politics happens to be one of those things. As we're more and more in these separate camps, that happens more and more. And I've been picking on Republicans, but there's certainly plenty of evidence, Democrats also. Most scholars right now would argue that it's been asymmetrical, that it's been Republicans that have moved to the right first. And there's evidence for that in if you look at congressional votes over time. But, you know, nevertheless, Democrats now are, in fact, sorting more to the left quite often. And if you're being demonized, you demonize back. And they are. And so there's not a great answer for what you do. If you don't do it, you might get steamrolled. And if you do it, you're perpetuating the problem. And that is a very deep problem. It's very hard to get out of. And it's much easier to say, here's what the problems are than what the solutions are. You know, certainly there are efforts out there to improve the situation, but it is difficult.
All right. So it's pretty easy to look at today's news and just kind of see doom and gloom. So is there anything positive you see right now in our political landscape?
Well, sure. There is, believe it or not. The fact that there is a vaccine so quickly is miraculous. You know, the degree to which science worked and, you know, it happened very quickly, right, is the general reporting. But, of course, there's a lot of basic science that went into that, decades of it. So this goes back to funding from both parties for a long, long time. But just that it came to fruition so quickly has been amazing. So as much as there is to be dejected about the pandemic and our reaction to it, and our political reaction to it, all of that, at least that is good. that is quite remarkable. I also take some comfort from younger people who tend not to be as polarized as some of their older folks. Younger folks tend to be more tolerant than older people. Again, these are broad generalizations, but you know they do show up in poll after poll. Whether or not that will translate into a kinder, gentler relationship between people in the future, we'll see.
Right. Well, and that has to feel good as someone who works and interacts with the younger generations.
Indeed, right. So, in fact, last year, rather inspirational. Last year, it's 2022, isn't it? So yeah. This would be in the run-up to the 2020 elections. The head of the College Republicans here at St. Mary's and head of the College Democrats at St. Mary's worked together to get people registered to vote. They did all sorts of talks in courses. They hand out registration cards. And they played very nicely with one another to get people involved. And they were sort of a model of how it should be.
Well, David, thank you so much again. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for having me on.
St. Mary's Currents is a production of the St. Mary's University of Minnesota Office of Marketing and Communication. It is produced by Ben Rogers and Deb Nergang. It is recorded, edited, and engineered by Jeffrey DeMarsh. Our theme music is written by Will Van de Kramert. I'm Ben Rogers. We'll see you next time for St. Mary's Currents.